shepherds, and one of the ways that they serve this congregation is to be available on Sunday morning at this time. So a couple of elders and their wives will be out in this hallway to my left if you're in need of any spiritual counsel or any spiritual prayers. We're in the story of David in 2 Samuel. It's a great story, but there are so many great stories in the Old Testament, aren't there? David lived about 1,000 years before Christ, and even before the time of David, there were all these stories about how God had directed and led his people. And Jewish people, they were instructed to, and they loved to tell these stories over and over again. Parents would tell their children all of the stories of God creating the world, about Adam and Eve, and about Cain and Abel, the Tower of Babel, Noah, our great father Abraham that God revealed himself to. All of these marvelous stories about how the Jews were chosen as a special people to God to represent him, and how God was going to work through that nation in a very special way. So all of these stories were told over and over and over again. And I can imagine that when David was a child, his father Jesse and Mrs. Jesse, I'm not sure what her name was, but I'm sure they told David these stories of God's people in the past. And I bet one of the stories that David's parents told him was about the Ark of the Covenant. This was a prized possession of the Jewish people. It was a rectangular box overlaid with gold. It must have been quite a sight to see with these angels with their wings just spread out over the top of that Ark of the Covenant. That top was called the mercy seat. It represented the presence of God with the people. The origin of the Ark of the Covenant goes back to the Exodus story. After the people are set free from Egypt, God gives Moses some instructions to first build a tabernacle. This was a portable worship center. It was a tent, so to speak, where people could offer sacrifices. And it was supposed to be right at the center of the Israelite camp. All of the other tribes were encamped around the tabernacle. And the tabernacle had three different areas. The outer area was the outer court, and there some of the sacrifices were made. But as you went further into the tabernacle, there were two areas that were even more special. There was one called the Holy Place, and there were some articles of furniture there that represented God's presence, candelabra and some bread that reminded them of God's presence and provision for them, and that was called the Holy Place. But then even further into the tabernacle was another section, and that was called the Holy of Holies, or the Most Holy Place. And in that room, there was one article of furniture, and it was the Ark of the Covenant. Over time, there were several artifacts, three artifacts that were placed within the Ark of the Covenant. One of the tablets of stone that contained the Ten Commandments, which represented how God was spiritually and ethically providing for his people. And then also there was a jar of manna. Manna was that bread, that miraculous bread that God provided for the people during those 40 years of wilderness wanderings. And it represented how God provided for them physically as well. And then also in the Ark of the Covenant was Aaron's rod. And this was reminiscent of how Aaron was chosen as the high priest to especially represent the people of God, and how his family, his tribe, the Levites, were the priestly tribe, and they would take care of and manage all of the spiritual affairs of the people of Israel. The Ark would lead the people as they went from one place to another in the wilderness. They were nomadic people during those 40 years. And every once in a while, God would say, hey, it's time to up and go and move. And so the pillar of cloud would start moving, or the pillar of fire. And the Ark of the Covenant would lead the way as the people went from one place to another. And then eventually, when the people of Israel went into the promised land, into the land of Canaan under Joshua, to take possession of that promised land made to their forefather Abraham, it was the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant over and through the Jordan River. But there was a precise way to carry the Ark of the Covenant. In the Ark of the Covenant, there were some loops that were on either side, and there were poles that were supposed to go through those loops, and it was only the priests, the Levites, who were to carry that Ark of the Covenant. It was immensely important to the people of Israel. So when they possessed the land, the Ark ended up in a city called Shiloh. But then in time, something very tragic happened. Now, this was more recent in David's time. It was when David was probably about 10 years old, and Saul was the leader, the ruler of Israel. They were battling with the Philistines, and they continually battled with the Philistines, didn't they? But one day, the Philistines came into battle against the Israelites, and the Israelites had moved the ark into the battlefield, and the Philistines prevailed, and they captured the Ark of the Covenant. This was absolutely devastating that the ark was no longer in the presence of the Hebrew people. But for the Philistines, I mean, this was a great sign of their victory. It proved that their armies were superior to the armies of the Hebrews, but more importantly, it proved to them, or they thought it proved to them, that their god Dagon was greater than the Israelite god Yahweh. And so the Philistines take the ark to the temple of their god Dagon in one of their cities, Ashdod, and they set it right there in the temple. And the next morning they get up to see how Dagon was doing, because that's what you have to do. You have to check on your idols. Isn't that odd? But they came into the temple and they noticed that Dagon was laying down on the ground as if he was worshiping the Ark of the Covenant. And so they thought that must have been an accident, maybe a little earthquake. And so they prop Dagon back up, and the next morning they come back in, and even worse, Dagon has fallen again in front of the Ark of the Covenant, but this time his head has fallen off and his hands have been broken off as well. Meanwhile, the people of Ashdod start noticing that they're breaking out in these tumors. And they start to realize, hold on, we don't want to have anything to do with this Ark of the Covenant. And so they ship it off to another city of the Philistines, a city called Gath. And so they take the Ark of the Covenant, and similar things start to happen to them. They all start breaking out in these tumors, and so they're realizing, hold on, something is not right. And so the Philistines get all of their smart religious people together, and they think, what should we do? And they decide, we need to give this Ark back to the Israelites. And to make things right, we're going to offer the Israelites a sacrifice as well. And so they put the Ark of the Covenant on a cart. That's how they move things. And they sent it to a city called Beth Shemesh. And the people there, they're out working in their fields, and they see the Ark of the Covenant coming from Philistine territory. And they're just all excited. They're just overwhelmed with joy that the Ark of the Covenant is coming back into the possession of the people of Israel and is coming to their town. But soon after that, something tragic strikes again. Some people, there are always people like this, aren't there? They look inside the ark. They treat it as if it's just an ordinary box. And on that day, 70 people die. So the people of Beth Shemesh, they have the same reaction as the Philistines. They don't want it, and so they ship it off again to a city called Kirath Jearim. And they give it to a man called Abinadab. And he has at least three sons that we know of. And he assigns one of his sons, Eleazar, to stand guard over the Ark of the Covenant. So essentially, it's in a storage facility at this point, just collecting dust. And it stays there for 20 years. Now, that all happened during the days of Saul. But Saul is now dead, and David is king. At least he's king over the southern part of Israel, that tribe of Judah. In the northern part, Saul's son Ish-bosheth is ruling. So the kingdom is divided at this time for about 7.5 years. But after that 7.5 years, the northern kingdom, they get on board with the idea of David being king over a united nation of Israel. And so they send a delegation to Hebron and say, David, let's do this. Let's make you king over the whole nation of Israel. You're a Jew just like we are. You're one of us. You've proven yourself as a great leader under the reign of Saul. David was one of Saul's mighty fighting men and was involved in some of these battles with Philistines and other enemies. So he proved himself to be a loyal servant of the nation of Israel. And then they remembered one more important thing. The prophet Samuel had been telling them until the day he died that David had been anointed to be the king over Israel after the death of Saul. So they anoint David and they ask him, "Would you please be the shepherd of our nation?" So the nation is somewhat united under one king, but there's still a little division here. The nation is together politically. They have one leader, one ruler. But spiritually, they're not all together. And so David's first order of business is to restore the unity of this nation. Because it's been a long time. It's been a real long time since they have felt like one nation. And Saul may have brought a degree of unity among the nation, but everyone knew there was something missing. Politically, we're under one king, but spiritually, there's just not that unity that we know that God wants us to experience. And David knows that this nation is not going to prosper and be able to represent God the way that they are supposed to represent God unless they are united, unless God is back at the center of this nation. And that may be David's greatest legacy, is that he brings God back to the center of the nation where he was always meant to be. So that seems to be David's first order of business. I'll tell you the story from 2 Samuel 5 and 6 if you want to follow along. First on David's agenda, we need to find a capital city. We need to find a place that can be the spiritual hub of the nation, that all the people can come together at some point and celebrate these feasts that were prescribed in the Old Testament law. He was in Hebron, but Hebron wasn't going to work out. Hebron was too far south. He needed something more centrally located. Not too far north, not too far south. Also, he knew that it would be really an advantage if this city were defensible, because they lived in a very volatile area, lots of attacks and lots of wars. So the city needed to be a safe city. And in the ancient Near East, a city was safe when it was up on a hill. And then another very important aspect of a city would be it has to have some type of water supply. You know, we can't live without water, and especially a water supply that we can maintain even if we are surrounded by enemies. That will keep us safe. That will be able to help us ward off these enemies. And then he also thought this city, it can't have an allegiance to the south, and it can't have an allegiance to the north. It has to be kind of like a neutral city so that everyone can buy into this city being the center of the spiritual life of these people. And so he finds a city that meets all of those criteria. It's Jerusalem. Or as it was called in the old days, Jebus. It was centrally located in between the south and the north. It was built on a defensible hill, on a hill or a mountain called Mount Zion. In fact, Mount Zion becomes a term synonymous with Jerusalem, or sometimes just the term Zion refers to Jerusalem. So it was on a nice defensible hill, and it had a great water supply, and it had never been occupied by the Israelites. So it had no connection to the north and no connection to the south. And at the time of David's ascent, it was occupied by a mysterious group of people called the Jebusites. We don't know a whole lot about them. But for some reason, they were able to maintain their independence right in the middle of the land of Canaan. When Joshua came in and conquered the land, for some reason, Jerusalem was not taken. in all of these other wars, the Philistines, it was hands off. We don't know. There may have been something even scary to people about this city that they called Jerusalem. So neither the northern tribes nor the southern tribes had any special connection to this city. While everyone else was afraid to take this very important, centrally located city, David is able to do what no one else before him did, or at least he was courageous enough to do it. And he conquers the city of Jerusalem. And he takes up residence there, and it becomes known as the city of David. So check that off the list. We found a capital city. The next order of business is to do something about those pesky Philistines. As David is anointed king over the United Nation of Israel, the Philistines are watching from a distance, and they're scared. They know David, and they want to act. And so they start attacking the Israelites. And so David doesn't know how to handle this. And so what does David do? He inquires of the Lord on two occasions. He inquires of the Lord, what am I supposed to do? Are we supposed to go on the offensive here? And God says, yes, go on the offensive. And so David experiences these two great victories over the Philistines and kind of moves them back to their coastal land by the Mediterranean Sea. They're not totally gone, but at least the threat is removed for the time being. So check off dealing with those pesky Philistines. The next order of business, we need to get the Ark of the Covenant. And so David sends some men down to Abinadab's storage facility and makes arrangements for the Ark to be brought to the capital city of Jerusalem, so it can become again the center of the spiritual life of the people. And so to move the Ark, David has it loaded on a cart. That's the way the Philistines do it. That's kind of the modern way to move things on a cart. But God had instructed the Israelites to carry it in a prescribed way, with those poles, through those loops, by the Levites. And if you know that, you can tell something bad is about to happen. So two of the sons of Abinadab, Ahio and Uzzah, we don't know what's happened to Eleazar. He may have died. It's been 20 years. We don't know what's happened to him. But Ahio and Uzzah are leading this procession. And the people are all stoked. I mean, they're so excited. There's a great celebration going on. Finally, the Ark is gonna be back in the central location. But then the oxen hit a bump in the road. And the cart stumbles a little bit. And Uzzah reaches out to stabilize the Ark. And Uzzah drops dead. So call off the celebration. The celebration has turned into a disaster. Now there's so much about the story, it's hard to digest the story. But however you feel about this, you certainly have to admit, that God is telling the people of Israel, we need to be serious about this. If you're going to make me the center of your life, you need to do it on my terms. And if you want me at the center of your life, you don't treat me or the representation of me just like an ordinary box. You need to recognize that I am holy. And you need to maintain respect for that holiness of God. It's a hard lesson to swallow, isn't it? And David is furious. David is mad. He doesn't understand this. And so he just gives up on the project. He just leaves the Ark there. He leaves it behind at the house of a man named Obed-Edom. And so he takes it in. And for 3 months, everything goes right for Obed-Edom. Everything goes right for all of his household. I mean, this guy is blessed out of his mind. The Ark brings blessing to this household. God does get angry. But let's remember also that God is a blessing God. And his anger does not last forever. So David hears of Obed-Edom and his good fortune, and he says, let's give this another try. But this time, David goes back to the law. He goes back to the manual. It's always good to go back to the manual. It's always good to go back to the Bible. And so David has it carried in the prescribed way by the priests with the poles through the loops. And David has a tent ready for the ark in Jerusalem. And as it makes its way to Jerusalem, there is music and there is sacrifices, there are celebrations. And guess who is leading the way in the celebration? David himself. David is dancing before the Lord. I mean, he is pumped. He is excited. This is an enormous celebration. You know what? It's okay to get excited when we worship the Lord, isn't it? David gets back home, and his wife, Michal, is waiting for him. And she has this look on her face. What are you thinking? Don't you know that you're the king? Kings don't do that. Kings don't go dancing in the street. What are people going to think about you? You know, what's up with her? What's up with Michal? I don't know. She's had a hard life. And remember, she is the daughter of Saul. And so maybe there's still a little bit of that resentment that lives in her, that lived in her father as well. I don't know, but David's response is classic. Basically says, hey, I'm going to celebrate. I had to celebrate, and I didn't do it for you, and I didn't do it for anyone else. I did this for the Lord, and I'm going to keep celebrating before him. The Ark of the Covenant is back in Jerusalem. Check that one off. Well, David has done it. He has a city, Jerusalem. He's put the Philistines in their place, and the Ark of the Covenant is back at the center of Jewish life, and David propels the people to new heights as they unite around their God who has called them to be his chosen people. In years to come, long after David is gone, Jews from all over that area will make that pilgrimage to Jerusalem on those national feast days and be reminded of who they are, to be reminded of what God has done for them, and to remind the people that God always needs to be at the center of their lives. And on those trips to Jerusalem, they had a playlist of sorts, a playlist of psalms that they would sing or chant as they made their way up to the city of David. We call those the Psalms of Ascent. And one of those psalms was written by David himself, sung by Jewish people as they went to that holy city of Jerusalem. It's Psalm 122. I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet are standing in your gates, Jerusalem. Jerusalem is built like a city that is closely compacted together. That is where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to praise the name of the Lord according to the statute given to Israel. There stand the thrones for judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my family and friends, I will say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity. Prosperity. That's what David wants for his people. What God wants for his people. It's what God has always wanted for his people. And David has shown us the way. We prosper as a people when we seek unity. Unity based on the holiness and the lordship of God. When we keep him right there in the center of our lives. Jesus prayed for us to be unified. Paul urged believers to make every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit. And we prosper when we maintain proper respect for God, when we recognize His holiness. And always remember, when we come to Him, it has to be on His terms. His holy, perfect, loving terms. And we prosper when our hearts overflow with worship, celebrating His goodness, reminding ourselves that He is the reason for our existence, that we owe everything to Him. May God prosper us as the people of God. May God protect us. May God always surround us with His presence. Another one of those psalms on the playlist was one we read earlier. It's Psalm 125. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken, but endures forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds His people, both now and forevermore. As we sing this song, let's capture just a slice of the joy and the delight that the people of Israel felt as they went up to Jerusalem to worship their holy God, always knowing that they were chosen for a purpose and that God would always be with them. Let's stand together and sing.
As the mountains surround Jerusalem,